And now, Memories of the Past, presented by the Van Zantwick Memorial Chapel. Memories of the Past is an historical program aired on the second Tuesday of each month at this time. Your host, Doug Chapkus.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Doug Chapkus, and as my guest, I have John Munskelvin. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Doug.
How are you this afternoon?
I'm quite well. And you?
I'm well, too.
Well, that's good.
And I'm glad you're here.
Thankful for. So am I. I'm glad to be anywhere.
You said we wanted to talk about a storm today.
Yeah.
Well, we had a good storm the other day.
Well, we had such a big storm yesterday, and driving past around the lake today, the lake is almost as quiet as a mill pond. The Lord sure changes things fast, doesn't he?
The water was rough yesterday.
The water was rough yesterday, showing the wrath of God, and today it's the peace.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but think about it.
Yeah.
Well, today is Armistice Day, or Veterans Day, in Michigan. It isn't anywhere else, I guess. It is in a few states, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can remember the first one, the original one, and that was a day similar to this, cloudy and rather dark and not too cold, about the same type of a day we have today. But I'm thinking more about 40 years ago today, we had the big storm, the Armistice Day storm, which I guess people talked about for years. I wouldn't be surprised what you might see tonight's paper come out with some reference to it. I don't know. I haven't seen the paper. But that was a storm that had the one of yesterday backed off the map. There weren't any drownings. But that was a terrific storm. That started out in the morning with a fairly nice day. And by 12 o'clock, it began to get cloudy. As a matter of fact, some of the fish tugs went out. I know George Van Hall went out with his tug, and he wasn't sure he was going to get in.
Really?
And the wind came up. It got dark and cloudy, and the wind came up. And about noon, Mrs. Langrell, who ran the Highland Park Hotel, called up the office and said, you know that little storage building that I have out in the back of the hotel? And we said, yes. Well, she says, it isn't there anymore. It's down in the valley.
Oh,
so
no.
What do you mean? We hadn't had any sign of wind downtown yet. She said that wind just picked that shanty up and turned it over upside down and blew it down in the valley alongside of it. Well, I remember Jimmy and I were going out to see really what happened, and as we drove out Harbor Avenue, the river was going over the pier in the river.
Was?
It did that yesterday, too.
Did it?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I went out to take some pictures of this storm yesterday, and I was right there by the minnow shanty, and the waves in the river were washing over the pier and coming up on the land around the minnow shanty. The minnow.
Well, that didn't happen very often, does it, John?
No, very, very seldom. But, and I saw a boat was attempting to go out. I don't know how far out it went, but it was one of these coho salmon fisher boats.
Oh, boy. Yesterday in that storm?
I don't know whether it was Bob Hector or not.
Bob.
But he says, no, Bob says it wasn't him. But anyway, I don't know how far out it went because I didn't watch it. I think it turned around and went back. But anyway, I stood there taking some pictures, and I thought to myself, I wouldn't venture to walk on that pier or get out anywhere near it for anything at all. I had no idea that anybody was going to do it either.
No.
But, and then last night I heard that these boys walked out on there and were drowned, which is too bad, and the family has my sympathy. I don't know who they are, but it's terrible. It's too bad that they did that. But it happens once in a while where there's a storm, and it seems as though the people from away from here, and Grand Rapids isn't too far, they should get down here more often, would know what that water can do.
I don't think anybody...
I don't think they realize
from inland really has respect for the big lake.
We people who live here know that when that thing starts churning up, keep away from the pier.
It can be very beautiful, but it's nothing
to
monkey with.
Yes, it can be, and it was beautiful yesterday. The sun was shining, and the waves were glistening, and the water looked like steam, foam. But getting back to the Armistice Day...
Which was in what year, John,
1940. That'd be 35 years ago today, wouldn't it?
1940.
Yeah. We went out to see Mrs. Langrell's shanty or storage building, and that was gone, all right. It was tipped in. Well, just picked it up and threw it down in there. And it was a fairly good, it wasn't as big as a garage. But we got back to the office, and, of course, the telephone started ringing. Now, you want to remember, Doug, that this was 40 years ago. And as far as the insurance companies were concerned, it was not the homeowners' policies like they have today with complete coverage, wind and hail and extended coverage. As a matter of fact, there wasn't any such thing as extended coverage in those days. It was a simple tornado policy, and darn few people had them. They just hadn't been any windstorms around here, and there were very few people had a tornado policy, or a windstorm, we called it in those days. Some people who had had a new roof put on by Van Zylen Lumber had a small tornado policy because Pete Van Zylen was an enterprising merchant, and he put a roof on the house, and he would guarantee it against windstorm for 3 years.
Oh.
So he'd buy a windstorm policy for those people. He would pay for this windstorm policy, and it cost $4 for the 3 years, and all they could buy, I believe, was something like $200 or something. It was a very small amount, anyway. And that was a minimum premium, and so Pete was doing a pretty good stroke of business. So some of those people had some windstorm insurance, but not too much. Well, as I said, there was no extended coverage. Today, almost everyone has a homeowner's policy, a package policy with complete extended coverage. So they're insured for wind and hail and smoke and so on and so forth. We had 165 calls that afternoon and evening. We kept the office open till something like 9 o'clock, just answering the call and people asking if they had insurance to cover that. Some of them were fairly good-sized losses, and some of them weren't. Some of them were only a minimum loss to put a few shingles back on the roof. But I remember the sand at the Oval, the sand out the beach, was blowing so that it sandblasted windows. And there was one barn over in Spring Lake that blew over, and it killed a lady.
Somebody called on the problem solvers the other day and asked about that. Yeah.
Well, she happened to be going out to close the door to feed the chickens or something, and the barn blew over.
And they asked what year that was, and you say it was 1940.
And then that night, a man over in Spring Lake stepped on a hot wire. Wire blew down, and he was killed. And I remember Bill Blumendahl was a coroner in those days, and Bill's office was upstairs in front here of your office. And we were in the office, and Bill came down the steps, and he said, "I got to go over to Spring Lake on a coroner's call." He says, "Come on along." Well, my wife was home alone. In those days, we worked every night, and she was home alone that night. It was no exception. And I wanted to get home, and still I wanted to go with Bill because I knew he wanted me to. He was a good friend of mine. So we went over there, and, of course, this man had stepped on the hot wire, and it killed him. That's all. He was just gone. But I got home, and my wife was quite put out with me. She said, "Where have you been?" And I said, "Well, I went with Bill Blumendahl over to Spring Lake, a little east of Spring Lake." I said, "Why, what's the matter? Were you scared?" And she says, "Scared? I should say I was." She says, "The garage up at Jim Oakes's old house, Jim didn't live there anymore at that time, had blown over the fence, and part of it was in the yard next to ours. It blew apart and in sections, and it blew over there and scared the life out of her.
Oh, I'll bet.
And, of course, she was scared that everything else was going to blow apart. But that was really a storm.
Did anybody clock winds that you recall, John, in that storm?
No, but I suppose they did, because I think the Weather Bureau was still here in those days.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, but I don't know, but it sure was a wind. Well, George Van Hall made it between the piers. His boat, he was the last one in, and when he went out in the morning, it was quite a calm morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows you what our good old Lake Michigan can do if you get a little bit.
Did you talk to him after he came back? I wonder what kind of waves they had.
I didn't know, but I know they were plenty, plenty high.
Wow.
Because they were in the river like they are in the lake a good many times. Well, then there was people, you talk about these people washed off the pier. I remember on the 4th of July, and I don't know what year this was, but I would say it was in the 50s. Somehow in the back of my mind I got 56, but I don't know. I'm sure. I may be dead wrong on that. We had a terrific storm. It wasn't as bad as yesterday, but the waves were bad, and we were having a picnic at the Oval, and I remember my brother Bill was helping Van Zantwick at that time, helping Govey Van Zantwick, and he was called in, and I think there were six people that were washed off the pier that day, and they
Ooh.
Were, and I believe they were all from Grand Rapids. They were all
really?
From inland. They weren't any
from
here.
Yeah.
And they were warned not to go on the pier, but they did. And that was a terribly windy day. Of course, it wasn't as cold as it was yesterday, being 4th of July. But it was still as cold. It was
mm-hmm.
It was not picnic weather. I can tell you that. But that lake sure was furious that day. And well, as I say, there were six people that were. I believe two of them were from out here in the. Off Mercury Drive. I'm quite sure. It just come to think of it. But the rest of them were from Grand Rapids.
Well, I think many of the people in land, as we mentioned earlier, just do not have the respect.
They don't realize it.
No, I mean, even an undertow. It's they'll have the red flag up here, and they'll go right next to the city beach so they can go swimming.
Still think they can swim.
The flag is for a reason.
Yeah. Now, these boys that were out there with their surfboards, I would say that they probably knew what they were doing, because they've done this before and they were dressed for it.
Oh, yeah.
And from what I've heard, that their bravery has helped save the ones that got in.
Yeah. So just about saved the other one.
Yeah, but they couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
But it was...
Well, November, I was just... somebody sent a little piece on the teletype today. November has had a terrible history on the Great Lakes. I hear that big ship broke up last night up in Lake Superior.
The Fitzgerald.
Yeah. 25-foot waves, they say.
Yeah. Well, we lost in, I believe it was in 1929, we lost the Car Ferry in Milwaukee, and we lost the Andaste. That was in October. And the boat we've talked about different times, the Naomi that burned.
Oh, yes.
The Naomi later was changed into the E.G. Crosby, and then she was changed to the Wisconsin, I believe, and then to the Puritan, and the Wisconsin. I've forgotten just exactly how that went, but she sunk over near Whitefish Bay in October of 1929. And, of course, that was a wooden ship, but it was quite a sturdy ship. But the Car Ferry was a big steel vessel, and that went down with 52 lives.
Is that right?
And so that's what happened.
Yeah, in the fall, the lake can get very turbulent, can it?
You bet your life it can.
John, do you remember the the big snowstorm on Armistice Day or around Armistice Day of 36?
I remember in 36 we had a big snowstorm, and you couldn't get out Sheldon Road.
Is that right?
To the hospital. They finally got one track through there, but there were snow drifts up there 10 feet high alongside of the road. And
is that right?
Of course, there weren't any there weren't any houses out past the hospital, or not many of them. And
what did the people do that worked at the hospital?
Well,
stay there?
They walked. Walked through the snow or walked around it. They got there. Maybe some of them stayed there. There was quite a storm there. They didn't have the snow removal equipment that they have today either.
No,
you
want to
remember
right.
that.
That's right.
And when we got a snowstorm like that, why, it paralyzed things. And, well, it used to be that when the interurbans ran, once in a while they'd get stuck between
there
and Grand Rapids, yes.
How would they, did they ever plow those tracks?
Yes, they had a plow. They had a freight car with a great big V plow on the front of it as they go through.
Is that right?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised what they might have had a rotary too.
A blower time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there were a good many times in the old days that they interurban didn't run but didn't paralyze things like it does today. We're so dependent upon trucks and transportation and somebody else, other cities. What's this book Wilkie wrote? One World. Well, that's it. We can't get along without each other like we used to.
Yeah.
And in those days, you had horses and. 36, you didn't have horses, but back in the 20s, you did, and then they didn't plow it. Talking about snow on the main street and snow around, here's a postcard a lady brought me the other day with a picture of Nat Brown. You've heard me talk of Nat Brown, the photographer who made a kite and attached a camera to it with an extra string and took the first aerial pictures around
right,
here.
Right, I sure do.
Well, here's a postcard of Nat Brown, and he had a snowmobile.
He must have had one of the country's first snowmobiles.
Well, I would imagine it was, and
look at that.
It's made of a pair of runners of a sleigh, of a horse-drawn sleigh. And the front rudder, I don't know what he made that of. And he's got a V out in front of it. It looks to me as though the thing is about 10 feet long.
Yeah, I bet that thing didn't steer easy either, John.
No, he's got a pair of ropes on it to steer it.
I bet that ski skidded right straight when he turned it.
And he's got a steering wheel on it. I suppose he's got those ropes attached around a drum of some sort. And he's got an airplane motor and a motor with an airplane propeller on the back end of it. This picture was taken of him facing west, about in front of what's now the Patchwork Store, part of the Harbor Industries building. And in the first in Washington Street on the corner is the wooden building, which is now the Lake Upholstering Store, which was moved from First and Washington Street down to 409 North 7th. Next to it, you can see the two little old buildings that were torn down, and the Jurgensen building, or which is now a barber shop and the shoe repair shop, are in it, and the Doherty building are there. And then down a little further, you see a peaked roof building, which was the old Stansbury Saloon, and later the building that the Maytag people tore down. He has an arrow pointing, and you can see the town clock, the big church in the background. And this picture is, the depth of focus on the thing is quite something. I don't know what kind of a camera he used in those days. This is an old picture.
What year would you guess that was taken?
The date on the back of it. No, this doesn't have a date.
Isn't there a postmark on it?
No, this was never mailed. But he's got a note on it. He says, "The arrow is my old Photoshop. A fine theater front is there now. That's where the Robin Hood was, which now the Security First Plaza. Those sleds propelled like an airplane could travel fast." He's got that underlined, and he's got N.E. Brown, his initials, Nat E. Brown, under it. Now, Nat was quite a photographer, and he was also an inventive sort of a guy. I don't think he tried any stunts like Rip Wright did. but he was quite an inventor. I remember he tried to build an airplane. I guess he must have had a yen for airplanes because he had this airplane motor. But he tried to build an airplane that would go round and round like the propeller, something. I think what he had in mind, really, was a...
You want the airplane to go around the propeller stand still?
Yeah. No, but the airplane went around a shaft like... Can't think of the name. What they're using the word?
The helicopter?
Helicopter. Yeah. And he got off the ground.
Did he?
About 10 feet, and that was the end of it.
Did it come down fast?
It came down fast and smashed all to pieces. I don't think he tried to replace it.
He's lucky he didn't break his neck.
Yes. But as I say, he had an arrow there where his shop was, and his shop was where the bank is now. And as I told you just a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about I.N. Tubbs, the photographer.
Yes.
Well, I had forgotten this, but Nat Brown went into that building after Tubbs went out.
Oh.
So, and Nat, of course, has been gone a good many years. When I remembered him, his photo shop was down where, about where the Grand Theater is.
Oh.
Just about where the Grand Theater is, and he had a photo shop there now.
Well, now, John, they wouldn't let him run that machine down the main street, would they?
In those days, why, sure, what difference does it make? There was nothing else on it anyway.
Good land, wouldn't there be any horses?
There was nothing there.
Wouldn't there be any horses around?
There might have been, but...
Well, you'd take a snowmobile with an airplane motor on the back and scare a horse right through a building, wouldn't it?
It might have gotten the horse a little bit scared, but, well, I think in the background looks like a horse and sleigh there. But you see... Here was the main street of Grand Haven. There's just snow
it's
on it.
It's deserted.
Well,
looks
yeah,
like it's deserted.
It was deserted, but look at the snow on it.
I know.
That was darn good sleighing on
that. Would they pull a horse?
That was the kind of a road you wanted for sleighing with a horse. And,
yeah. Now, it looks packed down here,
yeah.
John, so I bet they must have been sleighs then that would
That's
do
right.
that, huh?
There was
now, what year do you think this was about?
Well, I don't know, but as I remember Nat Brown... he looked very much like he is there now, and I was about 16 years old, so I would say this was 1915 or 16.
My goodness. Were there any cars at all then around?
Yeah, a few.
Well, they wouldn't drive them.
They blocked them up in the winter.
Oh, they wouldn't drive them in the winter?
No, they didn't drive a car in the winter. Anybody had a car out in the wintertime, he was taking a real chance. They didn't have alcohol for the radiators.
Oh, and they were...
They just lay them up and put them on blocks and put them cover them up so they wouldn't get dusty.
I bet they had an awful time when they first started driving through the winter with antifreeze, didn't they, John? Because it's learning how to drive all over again in that ice and junk.
It sure is. It is even today.
Yes.
The first day we have snow, we have them in the office with Rex. They don't realize it.
No.
They start out the same way that they did the day before, and they slide. You can't stop them. It's quite a change. Well, how are we doing?
Well, we got another 5 minutes, yeah.
Well?
That is some outfit.
That is really some outfit.
Did he run the camera shop and do this inventing stuff on the side?
Well, you can imagine the camera shop wasn't like it is today. Kirk Blazer doesn't get time to do anything today because he's busy in his camera shop.
Yeah.
So everybody's got a camera now. In those days, about the only camera they had was an old Brownie or something like that, there were a few. I got one that was at home that was probably in vogue then. It's called a Primo Junior. It's a little folding camera, about 2 inches thick and maybe 4 inches by 5, something like that. It's a cute little thing. It still works, too.
Does it?
But it works on film pack, and I don't think you can buy a film pack anymore.
Uh-huh. Well, now, did he develop his own, would you guess?
Oh, yes. He developed and printed, and he had a regular studio there.
Is that right?
But there wasn't anywhere near the business that there is
now.
Now,
would he take portraits and stuff, too, or does it just...
He took portraits.
He did, huh?
Yeah, he had a regular photo shop.
Well, I bet they had to light that powder to take a picture, wouldn't they, John?
I don't know whether he did that or whether he... When he was over here on Washington Street, as I said, that building had the back end of it was all glass, and the roof and side of it was glass, so you had light. And you didn't have fast film like you have today, but they take a time exposure. And so you had to hold still a little while they took your picture.
My goodness. That is really something.
Yeah.
Well, they... What about, you talked one time about a meat store that you worked in. When it was weather like this, I bet they wouldn't have any heat in the store even, would they?
They didn't have any heat in the store. My father had the butcher shop, and the front window would be frozen. You couldn't even see in it.
Really?
And they'd leave the front door open, and they'd hang the meat out on the racks in the store. It didn't freeze.
Didn't it?
No, the meat wasn't frozen like... You freeze, quick freeze meat today. They didn't know anything about that. As a matter of fact, they didn't have any automatic refrigeration.
Oh.
And the butcher shop was the coldest place in the world. I couldn't stand it.
Couldn't you?
I remember my dad used to put on two or three sweaters and then wear a big white beef lugger. They used to call those coats shop coat over that.
Wow.
But I couldn't work.
What about the bakery? What about a place like that? No,
the bakery was hot. Bakery was nice and warm. They had a big oven in the back and kept the bakery warm. Mm-hmm. They had a furnace in the basement.
But nobody froze their food then, though. Of course, they didn't know about it.
It wasn't any such thing. They didn't have any frozen food. In those days, the only way you could freeze it was set it outdoors in a cold winter.
When people come shopping on their sleighs then downtown, it looks like this road is heavily traveled.
Sure. All the hauling was done with the Express Venn Brothers.
Was it?
And the butcher and baker, bakery and grocery store had sleighs to deliver.
They all delivered?
Yeah, all of them delivered. I worked for the bakery. We used to deliver bread in a horse and sleigh, open, too. There was no top on it or anything else.
Can the horses get around in that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
okay.
They would sharp shoe the horse. They put caulks on his shoes.
Oh.
And sharpen them so that when he struck any ice, he wouldn't slide.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a good many horses that fell down at that. There was nothing unusual to have a horse fall and break his leg.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But in this snow, he was all right. Pack snow.
Were there veterinarians then who took care of these horses? Did they have horse doctors?
Yeah. Old Doc Rose used to be over in Spring Lake on the corner of Fruitport Road and Spring Lake, Main Street and Spring Lake, Savage Street. And there was there were two or three of them in Muskegon. I think he was the only one around here.
Mm-hmm.
He took care of my grandfather's horses whenever he needed a vet. If he couldn't take care of himself, he was kind of half a doctor himself, or half a horse doctor himself. He took care of him most of the time himself.
Your grandpa invented that good spavin cure.
Spavin cure. Who was it I was talking to the other day about that?
Sprick spavin cure?
Sprick spavin cure. We had, I don't know what it was, and he said, I wish we could find a prescription for that, we could make some money, but I don't think you could. I don't think horses get spavins anymore.
Well, that's a sore in their leg or something, isn't it?
Yeah. It was a bunch on their hind hock, on the inside of their hind hock, and about the size of a horse chestnut, and would swell up. And it's, for some reason or another, they blister it, and the growth wouldn't go away, but it wouldn't pain them anymore.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't make them lame. I don't know what it did to them. I don't know what in the Sam Hill was in that.
You said it really bit, though.
Yeah, I should say so. Peel the skin off. Yeah.
Well, John, our time is gone.
Okay.
And it's been fun again.
Nice talking with you, too.
In a month, we'll do it again.
Lord willing, I sure hope so.
All right. Well, we'll look for you then.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Now.
So long, Doug.
Listen again on the second Tuesday of next month for another chapter from Memories of the Past, a Van Zantwick Memorial Chapel presentation.